home for the NBA Finals, World Series, and college football's national championship. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. KFNC and KFNC HD2 Mont Belvieu, Houston. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers. You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is ugly. At a Bulls game, they were down by 30, and Fire Nagy, the chant went up in the stadium at the United Center.
Yeah.
Right? I get that. Bulls fans, you know, professional football, whatnot. That I get that. Unfortunately, it also happened at a Lake Forest High School football game.
Yeah.
Fire Nagy. Fire Nagy. The unfortunate part is that Nagy's son plays for Lake Forest.
Well, they wanted him to get the message. Says, Dad, hey, just in case you guys weren't aware, we want you out of here.
That is not something that
we're looking for. It's not
great. That's a kid playing for a high school. All right. On behalf of
maybe he thought fire emojis Nagy. Maybe that's what he thought was they were saying. Fire emojis Nagy. See, if you say fire.
Well, it was actually the opposing team, Cary Grove, that was chanting.
That is awesome. I mean, it's not great for Matt Nagy's kid, but it's awesome to. If he was a quarterback, I would love it, because if he's like a wide receiver, who cares? Like, if you're trying to get into the opposing quarterback's head by chanting that you want his dad fired, I think it's ingenious.
It is. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I don't hate it.
But the Cary Grove principal said it was not. As a school principal, I want to apologize to the Lake Forest student athlete and his family for the disrespectful chant.
Yeah, but who won the game?
I also want to congratulate the Lake Forest Scouts on a great season. We hope to have the opportunity to compete with them again. I don't know who won the game. It doesn't say who won the game.
Well, the report yesterday was that tomorrow's game will be his final game. It's an interesting report to come out 2 days before he actually, coaches. He said that is untrue. All reports say otherwise. It will be the first time the Bears have ever fired a coach in season, if they fire him.
I don't get why. Why? I mean, a pro coach, I could see you want to get a head start maybe and you get the word out for college. You don't want to do that behind the coach's back while he's coaching. Mm-hmm. I could see in college you would want to do that. But why do you have to do that in the pros?
I don't know. I mean, you can only interview at a certain point anyway. And usually you're interviewing successful coordinators who are in the playoffs. So that's still quite a bit away. But
unless it's an untenable situation.
Yeah, unless he's
lost the locker room.
All those things. Yeah. I mean, the Bears play hard. They're just not good. But it's not like they look like they quit out there.
Yeah.
So I don't know why you would need to fire him now. I think you want to give the fans their chum, so you do something like that so they'll get off your back. But as far as what it does for the team, you're not in playoff contention. No guy on that staff is going to change the course of that season. So I'm not sure what the rush is.
You know, Keyshawn, this has been mentioned. And actually, there was a question about Ryan Day, about Luke Fickell, about whether or not a college coach should take over and maybe run a college offense for Justin Fields. Here's Keyshawn talking about that situation in Chicago.
It might make sense to go and hire a college football coach that doesn't have the responsibility of recruiting, the stress level that brings, where you now could just deal with grown-ass men with full beards, and you can't BS them around because they'll call you out opposed to the college game. So Ryan Day, Dan Mullen, maybe that's the way to go.
You know, I could see Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen did not like recruiting, apparently.
No, he apparently was sending out trial balloons multiple times after seasons to try to get an NFL job.
Yeah.
Like, that was his want. He didn't want to do the college thing. And the Gators said, all right, go ahead and try. Go ahead. We'll let you get a head start.
I could see Mullen starting as a coordinator in the NFL and then and then going and then becoming a head coach. I don't know that I'd give him a head coaching job right now for what he's come. Although, look at Cliff Kingsbury. He wasn't very good at Texas Tech, and look at him now.
He is the one guy you would point to if you have thoughts of making that transition from what appears to be a college coach with a college offense to an NFL coach who brings his offense to the league. And we had Greg Cosell on earlier, and he talked about what Cliff Kingsbury has done with that offense and how variable they can be. So Cliff may be setting a standard where if you can't win with one of the most talented quarterbacks to ever play the game, we'll still hire you, and as long as we give you another very talented quarterback, you can be just fine. So maybe Cliff wasn't a guy who should have been a college head coach for that long. He apparently fits much better in the NFL.
Well, and he loves it too, by the way. He has told some people it is awesome not being a college coach. It's awesome being an NFL coach. And you know what? He's getting the job done, that's for sure. Holy crap, that's a good football team. And it's in large part, look at, like you said, they won two of the last three games with Colt McCoy. They don't even have the probable MVP of the league for these last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
Or DeAndre.
Cliff's at the top of his game, but this is kind of a new level. Kind of takes him into depending on how the season plays out, it changes the perception of him. He goes from, you know, the good-looking dude who's hanging out in the mansion and, you know, just having a good old time to a legit elite NFL coach. We'll see how it plays out, but I think this has certainly helped the perception of Cliff Kingsbury, and it might be something that allows other coaches who feel the same way he does about, I'd rather be in the NFL if you give me the opportunity. I don't know if Dan Mullen has a personality to convince an ownership group that they should hire him. And Ryan Day seems perfectly fine at Ohio State.
Yeah. Would he want the Bears?
Yeah. I mean, it is Justin Fields, but his guy, but he seems A-okay right now.
No. What was your, for those of you that didn't hear, sad news, Philip Lindsay was cut by the team. It's sad news for Philip Lindsay.
Is it?
Well, yeah. Philip Lindsay would like to have a job.
If he gets picked up by a better team, is it? Is it sad news?
So Philip Lindsay.
What did he call the Texans again? What did he say the media called them again?
Scumbuckets.
Were we wrong, Philip? Not that anyone had ever called them that, but we were allegedly treating them like that. I don't think we were wrong.
In the preseason, he said that the Texans, hey, why y'all think we're a bunch of scumbuckets?
Well,
Philip Lindsay, what are you going to miss most about him? And his 50 carries for 130 yards, 2.6 yards per carry.
Yeah, David Johnson stealing your carries.
David Johnson, 46 carries, 137 yards, 3.03 yards per carry.
So much production from those running backs.
Man, 3.2. Look, if you ran the ball at 3.2 yards per carry, if you ran the ball every play, you would march right down the field for a touchdown.
That's true, because all you need is 10 yards per four downs for a first down. Yes,
that's correct.
As long as you got 3.2.
So why do they even throw the ball?
What about the times where you lose 4 yards on a play? And then
it's average. We're talking about average.
Yeah, but average over the course of 50 carries. What about the average over the course of four plays?
The Texans don't do that. I don't know if you've heard. Why would you need a Philip? Although Philip Lindsay is, you got now Ingram's gone, Lindsay's gone. Rex Burkhead is now your feature back.
This is why I don't respect your partner very much, because you have continued to harp on why are you signing these 1 and 2 year guys if that. Who are veterans? Well, you need veterans. You need to compete. Why?
What compete?
Yeah, exactly.
Where are you competing?
You're trying to build a culture, and you cut two of the running backs, before the season's over. Why did you need to sign Mark Ingram and Philip Lindsay if they weren't even going to last a year?
Why isn't Scotty Phillips getting all the carries?
So all the stuff about you want guys to raise the level of talent—they don't even make it through the year. Why are they there?
So that's why you don't respect Lance?
There are multiple reasons, but this is another one.
Listen, I have said why. I mean, yeah, Cameron Grugier-Hill had an interception.
He was great. He was good. Who cares?
Who cares? Is he going to be here in 3 years? No. Start the rebuild. Even if it's with if you didn't have these guys, you might not have won one game. What? No, you would have beat the Jags with whatever in that first game. You'd have one win right now. Maybe you wouldn't have beaten Tennessee. Maybe.
And
you know what you did by beating Tennessee? You ruined your shot at getting the number one overall pick.
You hurt yourself by beating Tennessee. Yeah.
And congratulations. Now you got the Jets, and Zach Wilson is starting.
Which means you could win that game, too.
No, that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. But I think you need to counter that with Davis Mills.
Ooh.
How about rookie that versus rookie? Move? How about that chess move?
Rookie versus rookie. I like it.
I mean, can't be a dumber organization. Well, it good thing you got all these 6-year veterans that cut, that nobody wanted. You pick them up, give them $2 million a year so that you win two games. What? It just doesn't make any sense at all to what they do. Ever, ever, ever. 703-780-3776. Still ahead, Pat Forty is going to join us here at 8:30. Dana Holgorsen at 8:45. Five Star is going to give us picks at 9:30 right here. So you got a segment to get in here. Any thoughts that you have on anything that we've talked about? Any thoughts on your Houston Texans? You're more than welcome to
Who
get in.
Who even thinks about them?
What do you think about your Texans? You're more than welcome to get in here. 713-780-3776. Hey, if you're looking for something fun to do this weekend. So the family's going to be here. The Rockets. You're damn right. You're damn right. On Saturday night. Are you going? Probably. You're going to go. Listen. You, your dad, your mom.
My dad's back in Nigeria.
And your brother.
My brother.
And your brother.
All these people who don't even live here.
Can all go, okay?
We're not the normal family.
Four tickets.
You're laying it out like everyone's married and everyone's great and living together. We're not one of those nuclear families. We're a broken home.
Four tickets, four hot
dogs.
Will
the Rockets bring us back together?
Four drinks, as low as $99. $99 for four hot dogs. Now, if you've got a regular family not like Dell's, okay, and you've got actually... And listen, there might be eight people there. So you do this twice. $200 for eight people to go to a professional basketball game, watch the game. It's the perfect way to finish your Thanksgiving weekend with the family. It's Saturday night against the Hornets. Let's go. Let's go, Rockets. Get your Rockets Thanksgiving Family Pack special today at Rockets.com. This is a great time. Listen, they're going to want to go. They're in town. They want to go. Rockets.com. That's Rockets.com.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. The godfather of Houston sports radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 8:16, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pat Forty joining us in just a little bit to talk college football and the college football playoffs. We started the show with that here this morning. We haven't heard from Luke Fickell, though. For those who don't know, they are in the top four. This is the first time that a group of five school has made it to the top four of the college football playoff rankings. They have it all ahead of themselves. If they win out, they're probably in, more than likely in. It would take an Oklahoma State to an Alabama win over Georgia and possibly an Oklahoma State domination of Oklahoma and Baylor to pass them by. Right or wrong?
Yeah, that's probably the nightmare scenario. Really, the nightmare scenario is Alabama beating Georgia, because then they know they have to go up against, potentially, if Oklahoma State wins out, a Power 5 champion with only one loss.
Yeah.
That's the nightmare scenario. If it's any other way, particularly Georgia beating Alabama, I don't think they have to worry.
They finally got there. And Luke Fickell says that they can compete. They can compete at the highest level.
I think we are a really good football team. I think we can compete at the highest level. And I say that because I think all three phases we've been really successful all year. And our defense has played well. Our offense has played well. But the other thing I think that not everybody, I would say I haven't had the luxury of having, is 30-some seniors and guys that have, you know, gone through a four-win season and kind of really felt like they had no chance and nobody gave them any opportunity. And then those guys to kind of grow up in front of your face. I don't know that I've ever had this good of a team with 30-some seniors that I think it means something a little bit different to those guys that, you know, have kind of battled through. I've kind of all of what they battled through.
So Cincinnati is there right now. Michigan is right behind them. Notre Dame is right behind them. Michigan probably gets boat raced by Ohio State. Let's say that happens on Saturday. Who is the biggest fan of the University of Houston right now?
It would be Oklahoma State. It would be them, and Notre Dame. Notre Dame and well, he says the committee, because the committee doesn't want if you're under the belief that the committee doesn't want to put Cincinnati in, the committee would probably enjoy Houston winning. It makes their life easier because they may want to lean towards keeping them out anyway, even if they do finish 13-0. They just may be forced to put them in because there are no other viable options that they can get away with without everyone yelling travesty about their and sham mockery. That word's been used a lot around me recently. But as far as the teams themselves, I think Oklahoma State's rooting for their boy Dana to get it done. And I think Notre Dame would love it too.
I would imagine Gundy's call. I would imagine Notre Dame played Cincinnati.
I know. And that would be another issue. But Cincinnati's loss would be the latest it could be. The day before the if they lose Houston.
If I'm Notre Dame, I'm sending one of my coaches to Houston, and here's all our tape. Here's everything we got on them. It's not like they don't have the tape. So, but, you know, if I'm Notre Dame, I'm doing anything I can to help out University
of Houston. So let's say Houston wins. Let's say they win the same way they beat SMU. Game's tied, and Marcus Jones makes a great play to win the game. Final play of the game or so, whatever. Just a close loss for Cincinnati. A close loss to Cincinnati, and Notre Dame's the only viable candidate because maybe Oklahoma State splits down the stretch, so they're out of the conversation. Are we going to put a Notre Dame team who lost their last game of the regular season, or at least championship Saturday, and still got into the playoff? Remember last year they lost to Clemson and still got in. Would they jump over a Cincinnati team doing the same thing? Who beat them head-to-head?
Well, then Notre Dame would have two losses.
No, remember last year Notre Dame lost to Clemson in the final week, and they still made it because...
Well, they lost to the number one or number two team in the country, whatever.
Well, they were ahead of Clemson, but yes, a highly ranked Clemson
team.
Right. But still, they benefited from, you know, being undefeated and making it, and they made it because they lost to a good team at the end. Houston's a good team, but they're not Clemson. Would they actually
that's the difference, though.
Understood, but it's still a head-to-head matchup where they won. And if they lose a close ball game...
You know, by the way, it's a championship game as opposed to Notre Dame not playing at all.
This is what I'm talking about. The committee, that would probably be the committee's nightmare scenario if Notre Dame's the only viable candidate left for that role.
Oh, I don't think so. I think they'd love Notre Dame being in.
I understand what they would do, but having to explain to the world that they allowed Notre Dame in last year after losing on Championship Saturday... And then dropping Cincinnati out despite their win over Notre Dame after a close loss in championship. Remember, Notre Dame got boat raced. They didn't lose close. They got destroyed. But because of their previous work, they got in.
But by the way, they're Notre Dame. Right.
I understand what's not fair and what
isn't. This committee doesn't care about you and your feelings or anybody's feelings about what they're doing.
No, I know. I'm fully aware that they would put Notre Dame in. Yeah. I just don't think they want to have that scenario take place because they have to explain themselves. And I don't think they want to tell the world that I know Notre Dame lost last year, game.
Which would they rather have, Cincinnati in the playoff or explain themselves?
They'd rather have Cincinnati lose and Oklahoma State get in.
Yeah. But right.
Look, the Georgia-Alabama
ideally, Cincinnati's out and Notre Dame or Oklahoma State is in.
Without having to say one loss Cincinnati doesn't get in over one loss Notre Dame.
So what happens if Michigan should happen to beat Ohio State by a point?
Ohio State's out with their two losses.
Ohio State is out with their two losses, yet they probably, the committee thinks they're the second best team in the country. And you know what? Even with a loss at Michigan, the committee will probably make an argument that, they got two losses, but they're one of the best teams
in
the country.
Understood. Two losses, you don't win your division, you don't even play in the title game. And if Michigan goes on to win and beat Wisconsin, Michigan's in, Georgia is in, and then Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame, that combination gets in. They're not putting Ohio State in. They wouldn't do it. I mean, they may think they should, but they won't. They can't justify it at all. Because I know it has almost happened before that a two-loss team made it. Auburn, and remember, they went on a run. They beat Alabama and Georgia late in the year after already having two losses, and they were in line to make the playoff, except they lost to Georgia in the SEC title game. That was going to be a two-loss team to get in. But they would have been a two-loss SEC champion. So you have to...
It's not unreasonable. We saw BCS. Just the two top teams have a two-loss team.
Yeah, the computers got involved. I understood. But I think in this scenario, with people and who they have to answer to, I don't think they would allow a two-loss non-champion in. I think they, if they could rationalize putting a two-loss Power 5 champion in, they would do it. Like I said, they're going to do it for Auburn, but Auburn couldn't beat Georgia a second time.
Well, Ohio State loses to Michigan by one. Michigan loses to Wisconsin in the championship game.
That's chaos. The chaos scenario.
Chaos. Notre Dame probably. Cincinnati loses to Houston. Alabama loses to Georgia.
If all those things happen, a two-loss Alabama with the loss to Georgia may make it in anyway.
Which one would be, yeah, loss to Georgia or a two-loss Ohio State team that lost to Oregon and Michigan?
Well, the Ohio State loss would be less recent than the Georgia, than the Alabama loss. So who knows how that plays out?
And they regard Ohio State higher than they regard Alabama right now.
And they should, considering what Ohio State did to Michigan State. I think all those things make for what people love about football, as far as college football, as far as all the talking points. I don't think the committee would enjoy that particular chaos scenario and trying to meander their way through a scenario where they have to explain why this two-loss team makes it, this two-loss team doesn't make it, this one-loss non-Power 5 non-champion doesn't make it. Why does Notre Dame get in? As much as we want a disaster scenario to take place, we're already on the path to a 12-team playoff. I don't think this would further that because the powers that be still have to figure that stuff out. I mean, I don't care if they have an awful Sunday and Saturday night. I just don't think it would matter very much, because I think we would probably see Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, and then probably Notre Dame if all those disaster scenarios took place.
Yeah,
and I don't know if anybody wants to see that.
It's going to be all big name teams. It's going to be. Pat Forty joins us on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5. And 92.5. So we got that to look forward to. We were at the Golden Nugget a couple of weeks ago, and man, was it fun. And we opened up the DraftKings Sportsbook, and man, was that fun. Making those bets. I had my ticket in hand. I had Patrick Reed beating Adam Scott in the first round, and it was a loser for me. But that's okay. You know what? I was able to bounce back. I picked up some winners. And listen, it's just so much fun. When you're there, and you can watch it on TV while you're playing your blackjack or your craps or whatever you like, the slots, whatever it is that you like in the casino. You do, or your poker. You can, and they got the TVs in the poker room, and it's a great poker room now. I don't know if you've been there lately. You haven't seen it. They moved the poker room. It's awesome. They're building a huge DraftKings sports book that's going to be spectacular. That'll be done by this summer. But you can still place your bets. You can still stay at a beautiful hotel. You can still go swimming out. It's the water, it's heated there, and it's just wonderful. You can still play golf on a great golf course. It was a lot of fun. We played it. I'm telling you, you're looking for a great time just 2 hours down the road as opposed to flying all the way to Las Vegas, spending all that money. You got a lot more money to play with if you just go to Lake Charles and the Golden Nugget. It is awesome. The Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. Get there.
The turkey. The football. And the after effect. Happy Thanksgiving from ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back. Pat Forty, senior writer, Sports Illustrated, joining us right now here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, usually on Thursdays, but we got Thanksgiving tomorrow. Pat, thanks for moving it up. We appreciate it.
Hey, happy to do it, guys. Good to be with you.
Are you with Matt Judon? That he despises mac and cheese. Are you going to have mac and cheese tomorrow?
I don't think it's usually part of our lineup. I don't despise it. I'm not opposed to mac and cheese, but it's not usually on our table on Thanksgiving.
This is sacrigilegious.
What
Matt Judon said was sacrilegious.
Are you going to have the Olympic medal at the table for Thanksgiving?
I don't think so. No, I think the table that would the Olympic medalist, her brothers like to keep her humble, and if the medal made an appearance, it might end up in the grave or the mashed potatoes.
That's a good family, keeping everybody humble. That is good stuff, Pat. Pat Forty with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Your impressions of the college football playoff committee yesterday?
You know, I think they did what I expected them to do. I thought that there would be no longer a way to roadblock Cincinnati from being in the top four. I did think that Ohio State had the juice to leapfrog Alabama. You know, huge, impressive win for the Buckeyes and another kind of scuffling win for Alabama. So that was all expected. And, you know, I think we've boiled down to eight teams that have a chance to go to the playoff at this point, and we're going to have some elimination games this weekend. I think Ohio State, Michigan, and Oklahoma State, in most likelihood, the loser of those games is out, and the winner has a stronger case.
We had this back and forth a little bit earlier in the show about what would happen if Alabama does beat Georgia. So they're in along with Georgia. Let's say Ohio State wins out and they're in. Would a undefeated Cincinnati still get in over, let's say, a one-loss Oklahoma State, in your opinion?
I think so. You know, I think Cincinnati has had a great season. I look at Oklahoma State, they're having a very good season as well. But I don't think beating Oklahoma is a great landmark victory necessarily. I just don't think Oklahoma is very good. Their record is nice, but what have they done this season? So in Stillwater, they should beat them. I'd say this, I think it's like the biggest game of Mike Gundy's Oklahoma State career because he has the better team. He has them at home. This may be the last time they ever play in Stillwater, and you've got potential playoff bid on the line. So I think Oklahoma State has to win this game, and then this is a rivalry where they have really taken the short end of it historically and certainly in the Gundy era.
Oh, no, it's been bad. I mean, they do have a better team. But wins over Oklahoma and Baylor would be better wins. You know, that's piling up. Two wins over Baylor, too. I think the committee is going to have a tough time with that one. I think that Oklahoma State would climb up, and we've seen that they want Cincinnati out of this thing, and this would be a reason why a Big 12 champ with one loss.
Well, I mean, that would certainly be the debate, if it comes down to that. But Cincinnati would be 13-0 theoretically, would have beaten Notre Dame handily on the road. Notre Dame, I think, is going to be in the clubhouse at 11-1 and be a top 10 team, and that would be better than any win on Oklahoma State's schedule. They would not have a loss to a 6-5 Iowa State team. And I think that, you know, they're going to have a pretty high-powered game against Houston at the end of this thing. You know, the committee has put them in the top 25, but seems pretty reluctant to move them up. I think they're at 24. The SMU game was very impressive, I thought, from Cincinnati. And I'm telling you, the Friday, the Cincinnati-East Carolina game is no walk in the park. East Carolina has gotten a lot better. They're 7-4, road game. It would make the Pirates' season if they could trip up Cincinnati here. So it's a challenging closing stretch here for the Bearcats, and we'll see if they get credit for it.
Pat, I want to move to the Big Ten, and not necessarily the biggest game of the year with Michigan and Ohio State. Michigan State and Penn State have agreed to terms with their coaches on major deals. My question is, who are they bidding against for these guys?
Well, that's a really good question. There was at least tire-kicking interest on Mel Tucker from LSU, for sure. Possibly USC. I'm not sure that was a great fit. The NFL, I think, is interested in Mel Tucker. He spent quite a bit of time at that level. As for Franklin, you know, I think that USC definitely had some interest there. And the SEC openings, both LSU and ultimately Florida. But, you know, were any of them willing to, you know, say, hey, James, you are number one candidate. We want you. USC might have been in that position, but it is interesting, you know, as the season went along, especially for Franklin, you know, the USC job opened so early and he seemed like a very obvious candidate there. And then their Penn State season was not great. And so he maximized his position when he could, I think, to get this extension and to get paid, which is what a lot of people are doing. But it is interesting that the two guys that look like may leave the Big Ten now, may well stay in the Big Ten. The Big Ten may not have any turnover this year.
Pat Forty with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Can you explain Ohio State only being open as a 7.5-point favorite over Michigan?
I am surprised at that. You know, I mean, given the recent history of that series and given what we've seen from Ohio State last week and in other recent weeks, you know, I just think they have a lot more firepower than the Wolverines, and it's a pretty narrow kind of scenario by which Michigan can win the game, and really by which I think even they can keep it close, because if they can't pressure C.J. Stroud and he can sit in a comfortable pocket and hit those great receivers against not great Michigan cornerbacks, you know, I think it's another field day in open space for Ohio State's offense, which is what we've seen several times here in recent years. So I look at that and think there's got to be some reason it's not a double-digit spread, because that's what I think it should be.
Lane Kiffin's on the verge of doing something that's never been done, I believe, at Ole Miss, winning 10 games in the regular season. Now he has the Egg Bowl against Miss State. We really don't know how those games go. Craziness always generally ensues. If you are Lane Kiffin and you're losing Matt Corral, are you looking for the exit door, or do you think, all right, I'm at Ole Miss, it's a pretty good spot, although historically maybe the fifth or sixth best job in that division. Is it a time to leave and just cash in, or should he stay and try to build something there?
I think he's looking. You know, I don't think Lane, I don't know what is a destination job for Lane. He moves around a lot, but I don't think Ole Miss was it. And, you know, I think that when Dan Mullen's situation became unstable at Florida, I think that there was some curiosity there, and certainly some Florida boosters who liked the idea of possibly Lane Kiffin coming there. That may not now happen, because I think they've kind of settled their sights on Billy Napier, though we'll see how that plays out. But Kiffin to Miami is gaining a lot of steam here. You know, Manny Diaz is all but out. I think we're kind of just waiting for that shoe to drop after the Hurricanes' last game this weekend. And then, you know, does Kiffin return to South Florida, where he coached at Florida Atlantic, and where, you know, that's a program that has a lot more advantages in its division of its conference than Ole Miss does in the SEC West.
Another Lane Kiffin move, though, is a bad look. How can any school trust him, because he's there for a year or two, and then he moves on. And speaking of Dan Mullen, is knowing that he doesn't like to recruit, is he done in college? Is the only option now for him pro football?
That's a good question. You know, I think that there is probably a high degree of interest, or at least curiosity, for Mullen on that side of it, and there has been talk before about him as a potential NFL guy. You know, I think everybody looked at the work he did with Dak Prescott and said, let's get that guy in that mind in the NFL and see what he can do with quarterbacks there. And as you said, one of the big knocks has been kind of indifferent recruiting since he's been at Florida, and if that's a bad knock to have as a head coach. I mean, I'm not sure you can necessarily turn that around at age 50 or whatever Mullen is, early 50s, and suddenly become a magnetic recruiter. So, I think he's still a good coach. I just think things got sideways, and as they tend to do at Florida, when they go bad, they go really bad really fast. But I think he could still be successful at the college level if he wants to do it, but it might be a good opportunity, good time to try the NFL.
It is rivalry week this week. Now, conference realignment has kind of changed the schedule of some of these games and when they get played. We still have the Iron Bowl. I mentioned the Egg Bowl. If you could pick your assignment just in all the traditional rivalries that have taken place during this time or this week of the year, which one would you choose to go to?
Well, I am going to the Iron Bowl. I've been there, you know, several times. Love that game. It is so intense. It's almost a little bit uncomfortable. It's a little bit also like Ohio State Michigan when the stakes are really high. It's like beyond people enjoying it, because the urge to win is so great, and so you get that, and it's great and it's fun, but it's a little bit like, whoa, this is crazy. The top choice would be Ohio State Michigan this year, but we have Michael Rosenberg, a writer who lives in Ann Arbor, so he's going to cover that one for us. But you know, there's so many great ones. This year, I mean, could be the wildest bedlam in Stillwater ever. Egg Bowl is always just a carnival of hate. You know, I miss Texas and Texas A&M, and I hope we get that back on this weekend in years to come. But I'm pretty happy to be doing the Iron Bowl this week.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Pat Forty with us here every week on ESPN 97.5. Yeah, that Texas, you really just can't wait to – I think Texas A&M would welcome that. Great. Well, they would love to have Texas back every year because that would certainly be a win. The way that they're going right now, I don't think there's any question. Pat, we appreciate it as always. Thanks. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, same to you guys. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, Dana Holgorsen joins us next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Don't you go anywhere.
Why don't we take a break?
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here, 845 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Bringing in Dana Holgorsen, the head coach of the University of Houston. Brought to you by Chastang Ford, by Damaris Barbecue, and by the good folks at HRNP, Mike Holly, big Coug guy, all of those people. Big Cougs guys, and love Dana and support the program. And he's joining us right now here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dana, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Happy Thanksgiving to y'all.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, man, and you and yours. And I first thing I got to ask you, because I couldn't tell by your reaction on the sideline what you thought of the refereeing on Saturday night. Could you elaborate just a little bit what you thought of some of those calls?
You're not a good friend.
I'm a great friend. I'm just asking him a question. That's all I'm doing.
I'm going to have to call my lawyer on that one. you know, we were a little too undisciplined. I will say that. It didn't get us beat. We got some big games coming up. We got to maintain emotional control and be more disciplined. Now, the one thing that there's 2 points if you really want to talk about the officiating, just officiating in general. There's 2 points that we talk to our players a lot about. One is aggression. I mean, it takes aggression to play the game of football. So I don't want our team to be, you know, not aggressive. So if you got aggressive guys out there, you're gonna get some targeting calls every now and then. You're gonna have some holding calls. You're gonna have some, you know, some pass interference calls. That's just the game, right? Really good teams get penalized at times, which that you just got to be able to overcome that. Which we did a really good job of overcoming that on Friday night. Now the targeting thing, the intent of the rule is player safety, which I support 100%. Anytime the head is targeted, you got to get that out of the game, which we've done a really good job of getting that out of the game. You don't see as many targeting calls. You don't see as many launching or defenseless players getting hit, that type of thing. The part of the targeting that is really, really, really tricky is when the guy that's tackling uses his crown. And it's inadvertent, you know, like, you know, we teach them to put their face on the ball. That's how you create turnovers, which is exactly what happened. I disagreed with that. But every time you have a targeting call, you know, half the people out there are going to agree with it and half the people are going to disagree with it. That's just the intent of the rule.
Yeah. Dana Holgorsen with us here on ESPN 97.5. Your team played pretty darn well, Dana, and picked up the big win that you had to have. Now you've got a team. This is a scary week because you got a team that you're facing here in a trap situation with everybody looking ahead because you know you're going to be playing Cincinnati. You don't know where right now, but this UConn week, this is where you earn your money because you got to keep this team focused.
Yeah, and it's not easy. It wasn't easy last week because we had things wrapped up. Luckily, we played a rival. You know, a team that had beat us 5 times in a row, you know, a team that we've been in two different conferences with was 15-14 overall. We had a lot of motivation to play last Friday night. Finished the conference season 8-0. You know, our conference is done. Cincinnati's got to go play at East Carolina, which has won 5 in a row and is a pretty doggone good football team. So I'd rather go to UConn than have to go to East Carolina to get to the 8th win. I ain't going to lie. I hope Cincinnati gets tripped up and they have to come here to play at TDECU Stadium here in Houston. I won't be mad about that. But you're right. We got to keep our team focused. The momentum thing is important. You know, we need to take care of business. There's only been 4 teams in the history of this program that's won 11 or more. We have an opportunity to do that here on our 12th game. That's important. If you need any other motivation at all, just I brought up the fact that in 2015, the number 19 team in the CFP was the Houston Cougars, and they were on a 10-game win streak, and they went up to UConn, and they lost 17-20. So, you know, that was only 6 years ago. We got a lot of common with that 2015 team just by having our 10th win and being on a 10-game win streak and having to go play at UConn. So there's some motivation to make sure that you take it serious.
Danny, you mentioned the game against Memphis, and after you talked about Marcus Jones and how he's the most versatile player in college football, the Heisman stuff began for him. He's a transfer from Troy, was a great player there. What did you see in him at Troy outside the athletic ability that made him a fit for your program? Because sometimes transfers can be hit or miss.
Well, they're hit and miss if you don't do your job. If they're productive at the previous institution, then they're probably going to be productive at your institution. If you do your research, you know, Marcus wanted to play a little bigger stage. He wanted to be in the city of Houston. His, you know, the artist, you know, he's an R&B guy, you know, so the artist aspect of it in Houston was appealing to him. You know, he did everything he's doing for us right now. He did at Troy as a freshman and a sophomore. So it's a no-brainer for us just because the production was there. Our corners coach and Doug Belk knew him and knew of him. So it was a fit, and we jumped on it. Unfortunately, it was before the one-time transfer thing was in effect, so he had to sit here for a whole year. And, you know, he was on our scout team, and we watched him make a whole bunch of plays and was excited about what he was going to bring to the table, which he's doing that. He's been, you know, special teams player of the week in the conference multiple times. He's been defensive player of the week in our conference multiple times. Would be offensive player of the week if we used him like that. It's just there's only one of them and you run out of gas, and there's only, you know, enough gas in the tank to be able to do the thing. So we're getting as much out of him as we possibly can. He's the most versatile player I've ever coached. He's the most versatile player in the country. He changes games. I don't care what conference you're in or any of that. His body of work speaks for itself. I think he should be in New York just because of what he does for us. Explain to me what other players out there do more for their team than him.
Dana Holgorsen here with us, brought to you by H&P Chastang Ford and Damaris Barbecue here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Every week. We had Clayton Tune on earlier this week and asked him, and maybe you can explain it. He said he really didn't change anything, but he had a stretch where he was 24 touchdowns and 19 interceptions. Yet this year he went to a 5-game stretch where he was 14 touchdowns and no interceptions. Anything changed for him? What do you see as the difference?
Well, he's the same guy. He just continues to improve. There's no doubt about that. But everybody around him continues to improve too. It's the evolution of an offensive football team in year 3. And so, you know, a lot of the guys that are playing right now have been in the system, as Clayton has, for going on the 3rd year now. You know, I said this before the season, if he doesn't show improvement, that's on me. And he has, you know, but he's been the same guy with how he approaches everything, to how he practices, to the importance of it, what his talent level is. In order for things to be good and look good, which we're still not where I want us to be offensively, but in order for that to happen, everything's got to come together. Everybody points their finger at the quarterback and the head coach. That's football, and that's never going to change. And that's just the way things are going to be. But people around him have to play better. We got to block better to where people aren't in his face. He can go through his reads. receivers actually need to be in the spots that we that he expects them to be in. The timing's got to be there. The run game's got to be effective. When all that stuff happens, things look better, and things are not easier, but they happen a little better, and that's what's happening now, and that's a result of Clayton just hanging in there and working hard every single day.
Sometimes people like to point to a turning point in the season where the coach knows his team is going to be good. Is that even really a thing, or is it just a week-to-week thing of progressing, and then you look up at the end of the year and you're 10-1?
Well, I'm sure there's multiple turning points. You know, not playing good in the second half against Texas Tech was a turning point. Got everybody's attention. We did think that we were going to be a good football team. We knew we made progress last year, even though the record didn't really reflect it. We were a bowl team, even though you kind of look at it and you're sitting there at 3-5 and there's a bad taste in your mouth. But most of those games that got canceled were going to be games that we would have won. And you get on a roll like we have this year, some of those losses might have been wins towards the end of the year. You can't worry about that. You can't. You just use that as motivation, which our team did. And so, you know, after game one, we didn't do what we needed to do for the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and our team came together and said it's, you know, we're not where we need to be, and we need to work hard to get there, and we have, and we've got consistently better. I just like the fact that this team is a tight-knit group, and it means a lot to them. I haven't sensed one time all year that our guys were frustrated with playing, and that's rare because most teams, they have lulls throughout the year. They have weeks where they're just not motivated. They have games where they just don't play good. I just haven't sensed that. Hopefully this isn't that week. We've been on them hard. We had a good practice yesterday. We're about to go out there here in 10 minutes and hopefully have another good practice and get ready to do the same thing that we've done for the last 10 weeks.
How's McCaskill?
He's good. He's a freshman, and it's week 12, and he's beat up. And that's just the way it's going to be forever. I mean, running back position they take shots and they get hit. And I've been proud of how he's came back from some of the things that he's had. He's had a knee on two different occasions. He's had a shoulder on another occasion. He's had a calf issue and a groin issue. And now it's a stinger in his neck a little bit. He went through non-contact practice yesterday. I said, look, just hang in there. It's the long season, but you know, things are winding down. He's like, well, he goes, I can't wait for the off season, but we got work to do here to finish this thing off the right way. He's a very mature young man. I'm happy he's here.
Yeah. No, well, Tayshaun hasn't. You don't miss much with Tayshaun in there.
No, Tayshaun Henry is playing his tail off. It's 1A and 1B to me. I mean, those guys, you know, Tayshaun's the older guy that's played a lot. Alton is the young cat that just has an abundance of ability and talent. But they're a good 1-2 punch. Can't wait to see what they do next year as well.
And how's Donovan?
He's good. He's good. You know, he was alert on Saturday morning when he came up here. So it was scary. It's the first time in my 30 years that we've had somebody carted off. Scary, you know. First of all, his health is good, and that's the most important thing. He'll be playing ball here real quick. You know, if something like that happens, it doesn't matter what I think or what he thinks. He's going to be in the medical ward for a while, so hopefully he gets out of it here real soon.
Yeah, that was scary. How difficult is it to get back to football after something like that?
Tough. That was a long break, and I was really proud of our defense. You know, especially like Deontay Anderson and Malik Robinson that went out there, and it was a third down play the very next play, and we stopped them and we made them go backwards and we made them punt, and they went out there and played good, you know, with people that weren't used to playing as much as they were. And, you know, especially Deontay Anderson, you know, he's an older guy that's played a lot, but he assumed Donnie's captain role out there, and Deontay's a captain too, but he assumed that vocal role, and that's what good teams do. You know, you lose something like that, then somebody else has got to pick the slack up, and we've done a good job of that all year.
Daniel Hogerson every week, brought to you by Chastang Ford, HR&P, and Damaris Barbecue, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hey, man, congratulations on just a great run. Continue it at UConn, and then we'll talk Cincinnati next week.
Sounds good. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I got my Damaris fried Cajun turkey being delivered Thursday morning. We'll be at practice. I get home at noon, and we can dig right in.
Let's get it. Let's get it, everybody. Thanks, man. We appreciate it.
All right. You got it. Go, Cougs.
Yep. And he's driving a Chastang Ford.
You're slipping. You usually set him up for the Damaris Cajun stuff, and you didn't do it this time.
Yeah. No, he did it.
I know. I heard him. Because you did.
How about if he? I don't have to carry him. What am I?
Carry him is what it is.
Yeah. You think, yeah.
Okay. Like I'm doing to you right today,
no,
right?
No. No, 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 no.
My back hurts.
What,
the work
what
I'm
am
doing.
I, the setter here? Okay.
I mean, I don't know what you are.
Oh, no, I'm not the setter.
But it's like we're in the pool playing a game of chicken. You're on my back, and I'm carrying you today.
Oh, you are.
Go ahead, say it.
No, actually, you are. I agree wholeheartedly because guess what? I'm already on vacation.
I know.
I've checked out of this show probably Monday. Okay? Well, so just so you know.
Just like the rest of us.
Yes. I'm pretty sure looking at the Twitch numbers. I want to talk right now about Cold, Clean, Crisp, Refreshing Coors Light. It's the world's most refreshing beer. I don't know if you saw the tweet of me and Chance last night. We were at Dana's show at Lil Woodrow's, and we had Cold, Clean, Crisp, Refreshing Coors Lights. That's right. We had the world's most refreshing beer. And if you're looking for the world's most refreshing beer, my friends, it's right there in front of you. All you have to do is check out the Blue Mountains. They're there every day. That's all you need. I think I might have one or five or eight. I don't know. I'm not going to limit myself. But I know this weekend, the kids love it when Dad has a few Coors Lights in them. That's what they love. Dad's fun. You see, Dad's. We're gonna have some fun with Dad now because he's got some cold, clean, crisp, refreshing. Because Dad's refreshed. That's what they say. Dad seems crisped. Dad seems refreshed. Yes, he seems all of those things because of Coors Light. If you're looking for the world's most refreshing beer, it's cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Light. Climb on, brother.
This is ESPN 97.5.